Hello, and welcome to the Youth Music Podcast, hosted this time by me, Adam Cookson. This episode is all about Exchanging Notes, an innovative four-year partnership project between music organisations and schools, funded by Youth Music. Delivery ended in 2018, and our research partner, Birmingham City University, have just completed their report, which is being launched on the 22nd of May. So we invited Kim Johnson from Derbyshire County Council, Sam Mumford from Drumworks, Helen Briner from the Warren School in Barking and Dagenham, and Victoria Kinsella from Birmingham City University to come and tell us about their experiences of delivering and researching Exchanging Notes and what they learned from the process. It was a fascinating and wide-ranging discussion covering the key ingredients for an effective partnership, the impact that Exchanging Notes had on young people, practitioners and schools, and recommendations for the future, including some ideas about how best to refresh the Key Stage 3 music curriculum. At a time when a lot of press coverage is focusing on music in schools being under threat, this conversation looks at how new ways of working can engage young people in school-based music making and support their musical, personal, and social development. I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so it's the Youth Music Podcast, and today we're going to be talking about Exchanging Notes. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And I want to jump straight in and first of all start off by speaking to Victoria. Could you tell us, please, like who you are and tell us a bit about Exchanging Notes, like what it was and I guess what makes it different from other kind of schools-based projects that have gone before?
Absolutely. So my name is Victoria Kinsella, and I was one of the researchers from Birmingham City University who worked on the project for the 4 years. Exchanging Notes was a project that brought together music organisations and schools to work in partnership with one another to explore what would happen when young people worked on music making activities and what impact that would have on their educational kind of outcomes over the 4 years. And another part of the project was to explore what joined up working would look like. You know, what would partnerships actually look like between music organisations and schools over this longitudinal period of time, which is actually quite a unique thing for Exchanging Notes. There's been many kind of creative partnerships projects formally, but nothing that really explored something for this longitudinal amount of time. So it really was a unique and kind of pioneering project.
Fantastic, thank you. And we're really lucky to be joined by some of the, I guess, key players in a couple of the Exchanging Notes projects. So we're joined by Sam from Drumworks, who was working with Helen from the Warren School in Barking and Dagenham. So Sam, could you tell us a bit about who you are and what the Drumworks project was all about?
Yeah, absolutely. Hi. Yeah, I'm one of the leaders in the Drumworks program, and I was running the sessions in the Warren School. Drumworks is a organization centered around playing. We use samba drums to play, but we work beyond genre. And a kind of core value of the work is that it's got a core creative approach. So we're writing with the young people, as well as playing repertoire, which the whole project plays. And we were, in the Warren School for 4 years.
Fantastic. And Helen, you're from the Warren School. Can you tell us about your role there and a little bit about, I guess, the demographics at the school and, you know, maybe some of the barriers that the young people involved in this project were facing?
Sure. My name is Helen Briner and I'm head of performing arts at the Warren School. And like many schools, we have students with a whole variety of challenges that impact upon their daily lives and their access to education. And our school was also going through a challenging time itself in needing to raise attainment and achievement. So this came at a very important time for us as a school, an essential time for our students. And these students were the focus group, but some of them were at risk of disengaging with education altogether, potentially a risk of exclusion through a variety of different reasons. And so they were some of the students, not solely those, but some of the students that we put forward for this Drumworks project for the 4 years.
Brilliant, thank you. Yeah, we'll come back to that very shortly. But before we do that, we're also joined by Kim, who's here from Derbyshire Virtual School. Could you tell us a bit about who you are, what's your role at Derbyshire Council, and you know, a bit about the Exchanging Notes project that you were part of for the 4 years?
Hello, I'm Kim Johnson from Derbyshire Virtual School. It's probably not very common knowledge what a virtual school is, but children who are in the care of the local authority are pupils of the virtual school. They all attend their normal school. So the virtual school is not a school in a conventional sense, but we look after in Derbyshire the overview of how those children are achieving in school. And also, if the young people are struggling in education, we can actually make some interventions to help support them to get back on track. So our Exchanging Notes project was working with Baby People, who are an urban music production company based in Derby. And we decided that we would have a cohort of 20 young people from our virtual school who are actually attending schools all around the county. So we had, I think, around 20 schools we were trying to liaise with. So it's a very different kind of project to the other one that's represented here today.
Yeah, it was going to be really interesting to explore any kind of differences and commonalities between two quite different projects. So, I mean, let's get stuck in. I wanted us to start off by talking a bit about, I guess, the central tenet to Exchanging Notes, which is about having different organisations with different priorities and maybe ethoses coming together. So, Victoria, could you maybe tell us a bit about, within your research, what you saw made for a successful partnership in Exchanging Notes? What were the kind of key ingredients of a good partnership?
Yeah, certainly. So there are a few key things that I would really like us to think about. The first thing is that successful partnership was when music leaders and teachers became colleagues, collaborating together, encouraging creativity in young people. But actually, collaboration and partnership is not just about the music leaders and the teachers, but the young people need to be a huge part of that partnership as well. So young people need to be included in the pedagogical and musical choices that are made. And that was particularly strong across the 4 years with the projects. Alongside that, and I'm sure Kim will expand on this a little bit further, but this idea of multi-agency and interdisciplinary working was really important, where often some of the music leaders started to talk to other agencies, kind of social workers as one example, that they never would have had access to before. So the range of professionals working together in terms of partnership extended beyond, you know, the music organisation and necessarily the school. And then the kind of final point is that to work together in partnership is to move beyond reflection and actually start to reappraise each other's work and to really kind of be okay with being uncomfortable at times, questioning, and really have this sense of criticality with one another. And over the 4 years, that's certainly developed between the projects.
Brilliant. Well, I mean, you know, that sense of partnership working, we're really, you know, grateful that we've got sort of two people here from one of those partnerships. So could we start by talking about, yeah, that partnership between Drumwork, Sam, and the Warren School, Helen? And yeah, how did that kind of come about? Where did you start with a project like this and forming that partnership?
I think first of all, we sat down and had a meeting about what we felt the project would bring to our students, what it would bring to the school. It was important for Sam and the other Drumwork students to understand the background of our students and the current provision that they experienced in the school, and to map up what we thought was going to be the best way of the project running. And then regularly throughout the process, realising that some of those decisions we've made weren't perfect. The students weren't always responding in the ways that we were anticipating, and adapting constantly to the very clear messages that they were giving us through their dialogue and through not showing up to a session, etc. And so we'd adapt and move sessions and change and mould it around what was working best for the students and take it from there, regularly speaking to one another, making sure that that dialogue was constant and always open and frank and honest as well.
Yeah, I think it was a really important balance between quite an informal relationship, talking things through, making sure that we're flexible with the needs of each other's context, and yeah, having open dialogue, really, whether that was specifically aimed at investigating the needs of the individuals in the group or whether it's about trying to think about the broader kind of collective needs of that group, but also the school as a wider environment. yeah, I think we developed a relationship based around trusting each other's approaches as well, you know. And part of our responsibility in that is to communicate our philosophies around the work and to enable that to cohabit with the philosophies in the school.
Right. And I mean, you mentioned some of the challenges and the fact that you had to be very adaptive. Could you give us an example of maybe something that came up maybe early on and how you had to kind of be quite nimble to adapt to those things?
I think by the nature of some of the students that were involved in the project, any other class teacher in the school would have thought it was the class from hell, potentially. And putting them all in the same group with drums wasn't necessarily going to be always a conducive, focused working environment until trust was built up with the tutors. And for a long while, there was consistent patient work run by the Drumworks tutors in moulding the sessions to what the students needed and getting them on board. And then we had a discussion about, well, we needed to bridge the gap between the Drumworks tutors and the school. And there were no members of the school staff present at those sessions at the time. It was solely run by the Drumworks tutors with our support. And it was felt that we needed the right person in there from the school to create that link. And if it had been a member of SLT, that would have impacted negatively upon the positive environment of the work that was being done, and the students might have felt they were being observed in some kind of way. So we worked with a member of staff who was already nurturing the students through their behavioural needs and various other things, and invited her to come along to the group. And Sam, you could probably talk about more about how she got involved with the group.
Yeah, I mean, I think always from our perspective, we were trying to create environments where everyone is kind of equally engaged. So it was really important for whoever we had in the room with us to be an active participant in the music making process. And that worked really well with Sue, who came in to work with us. I think also, even from the beginning, obviously there is an element in this work which requires some degree of chaotic process, you know, to allow processes and practices to form through that. So there was an expectation of allowing space for struggles to resolve through the work. So we as practitioners have to always be flexible to that and responsive to that. And we were very lucky in this situation that Helen and the school were able to support that process. And I think that was set a precedent for the whole 4 years, where we would, if there was something that needed to be fixed or amended or developed, then we would find a solution, you know, based on trying to do the best for the participants.
Yeah, and so there's a sense that trust across the partnership was centered around that you both were focused on what was best for those young people.
Yeah, always young people are at the center of it.
Yeah, fantastic. And I mean, you mentioned, Victoria, the multi-agency partnership working, and I think that's, you know, obviously so key to the work that you were doing, Kim, in the virtual school. Could you tell us a bit about how those partnerships worked across the number of different organisations? Like, who was involved, first of all, and then how did those partnerships develop over the 4 years?
You can probably imagine that around each individual participating young person, there's a lot of support. In terms of, there's foster carers, there's social workers, there's independent reviewing officers, there's sort of people who are supporting in the therapeutic role. And in a way, all those agencies have got kind of are holding that young person kind of in the centre, and it's making a contribution to that child's life, both in terms of their social care experience, but also their participation in the world, their aspirations, and also their current education achievement. And those people always come together with the young person on a termly basis to discuss the young person's progress, how they're feeling about things, and actually trying to problem solve and put support in place to help in any way that they is needed. So that group formed really the professionals around the child, that support group, which meant that the music was playing actually a very central role in terms of that connection between the reason why they were involving themselves in the work in terms of their music interests or their preparedness to kind of have a go and to work with musicians and step out of their comfort zone, try new things, widen their horizons. And I think the people around the young person were very supportive and actually amazed that perhaps young people who are maybe a little resistant or struggling, lacking confidence, in terms of actually what they were demonstrating by their really enthusiastic participation in the music. And I think that was an early aspect of actually the adults kind of going, oh, you know, actually what's happening here? This is really interesting. We've actually got something very, very positive, which actually is very holistic too, because it straddles both those sides of the young person's life. But of course, to make those opportunities work and to really make sure the young people kind of get full access to it requires quite a lot of organisation, and all those different people actually have different roles. So just down to kind of making sure the young people get, you know, to opportunities, you know, which might, Derbyshire's a large county, it might involve a drive of 50 or more miles. You're just making sure that those people, feel that sense of actually this is really, really important. And I think so over the course of the project, because young people were completely sort of signed up to the work, were enthusing and engaged in it, other people started kind of coming in and supporting, which then opened up all sorts of dialogue about what actually sport is really working, you know, how can we build on this? I think it, you know, early on that dialogue around the music participation was really, really positive.
The music leaders and baby people, very early on in the project, were saying that exchanging notes opened up a space to speak with other professionals that they would never have had the opportunity to speak to before. And by speaking to those other professionals, they found out so much more about the young person, which enabled them to really target their provision in a much better way. They had more knowledge and understanding of the young people, which really moved the project on in ways that if they weren't invited into those personal education planning meetings, that perhaps wouldn't have been possible. So that understanding that the music leader became a professional as part of that team was, you know, such a huge impact then for the young person.
And I think really it's a reciprocal situation as well, because with the young people's participation, the other adult, the other professionals started to see that young person in a different light, you know, different interests that they had, and actually displaying different kind of, identity almost within those different environments, right, which actually was very illuminating, I think, for those multi-agency professionals.
So, I mean, not actually dissimilar to what we were hearing about, you know, the support staff in the room at the Warren School, who were kind of becoming musicians in that space as well, you know.
I mean, absolutely. I think it was invaluable having that support, but it was also, I think, the sort of recognition of a shared idea of what we were trying to reach as well. You know, the person that we had in the room was also, she would also prioritize factors like nurture and care and, you know, and communication, and but in an open way. And that very much tied into our philosophy, and therefore we could work together in that way, in a natural way.
I kind of want to dig a little bit deeper on, I guess, some of the practicalities of how to make these kind of partnerships work, because, you know, they're not always easy, I'm sure. And I know that, you know, bringing two organizations together can have its challenges. We've explored that already. So Victoria, one of the things that you've highlighted in the research and in the report that's due to be published very soon is the importance of what you call the interlocutor. I'm really glad that I said that correctly. I won't say it again. So could you tell us a bit more about what that word means, mm-hmm. And how that functions in terms of embedding a partnership in a project like this?
Yeah, absolutely. So in our final report, we've kind of thought of this term, the interlocutor, and it means in Latin to speak between. So for many of the projects, they will probably call the person that we're talking about here a project manager, who usually had an organisational role. But actually, we found that their role moved beyond organisation and management of a project. And actually what these people were able to do was they were able to bridge formal and non-formal language. They were able to speak to music leaders. They were able to speak to teachers. They were able to speak to senior leadership teams. They were able to bridge the wider community into these projects. So they opened up shared spaces for discourse and dialogue between people. Often they weren't necessarily part of the doing of the project, but actually that slight distance away and being able to observe what was going on gave them a different kind of vantage point, which then meant that they were probably able to observe things that whilst the music leaders and teachers were so busy in the doing that they often didn't notice. But I think the key thing about this notion of an interlocutor is that they were able to bridge the formal, the non-formal. They were able to bring people together to share discourse, dialogue, to explore and reflect with one another.
So it's having that shared language that everyone understands. I mean, can we talk a bit about the interlocutors in your projects? So maybe if we start with the Warren School and Drumworks, who was playing that role in your project and how did that work?
So Jenny was the person who oversaw the project.
She would come
along to some sessions to get a good overview of what was occurring in the sessions and the progress being made. Would also meet with us as well as staff and establish what we needed and how to look forward. And because she had that separation from the project, she wasn't there every single week. She could question us about the plans that were going forward and really make sure that we were doing the right things and we were on track. She could do all the organisational things that neither of us would have had time on a day-to-day basis to do, and order the equipment. And, you know, I would do the scheduling of the groups and speak with the students, but I couldn't do all the other side of things. And she also organised things like CPD training for other staff at our school to make the project so much more than just a music department project and share it with other colleagues across the whole school, from NQTs to support staff to SLT, and really engaging everyone in this project. And she was able to do that and also meet with the head teacher and give it that gravitas that it needed of someone overseeing the whole project at a higher level than maybe the people directly running the project with the students like myself and Sam.
Yeah, that's fascinating that someone kind of from outside of the school that was so key to playing that role to kind of helping to bridge the project and embed it across, you know, across the school as well. And I think in terms of the Derbyshire project, I think we may be looking at the interlocutor right now. And Kim, was that the role that you played, would you say?
Yeah, I was trying to unpick, because I think that's a really key role. And I think in our case, we had myself within Derbyshire Local Authority and Julian Butt, who was one of the directors of Baby People. And I think jointly, we work really closely together. And I think in terms of that mediating role, it's very important that Julian and I work together to get a really strategic sense of what we wanted to achieve for both our organisations. And I think that close collaboration was really about finding the connection point between the very formal processes and, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but sort of a target-driven approach, you know, in a local authority. And I think schools have the same challenge, that actually there are kind of measures of success are very specific, and so our organisations are kind of quite focused on those kind of deliverables, and of course from a music organisation's point of view, the Baby People have got a very different sense of what the purpose of their work is with young people. So it's that meeting point that Victoria's just described was a kind of philosophical meeting point, but also a point at which we could somehow find a way of actually making connections between those formal and informal arenas, really. And I think it was because Julie and I worked together so much that we were able to change not change the language, but to start to use the language interchangeably, so that actually we're getting the best from both worlds, and actually that we were changing both worlds through that approach.
And I guess that, and I get to kind of come back, I think, to a point from earlier that having kind of the time to do that. I mean, this is obviously something that's was funded by, you know, the National Lottery via Arts Council in England to run over 4 years. And I think that having that time seems absolutely key. Is that something that came through, Victoria, in the research?
Absolutely. I think in terms of partnership, I think a lot of the projects would have said that 1 year, 2 year wouldn't have been enough. If we want change, funding has to be given to projects over a longer period of time. Partnership does not happen easily. It takes time. Criticality takes time. And therefore, the 4 years was vitally important for projects to reach a point where actually they were working together. They developed pedagogies together. So, you know, that 4 year element was really crucial.
Well, pedagogies, that's something else that really came through in the research, wasn't it? Something about having a shared pedagogy, a collective pedagogy between the music organisation and the school. Could you tell us a bit about that, Victoria? You know, it seems so important. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I suppose what would be good to start off with is thinking about what is collaborative pedagogy, and it's a kind of process of developing shared strategies, thinking about shared judgments. Kim mentioned, you know, this notion of measures of success. What was, you know, joint measures of success? Understanding of young people's needs, which we have touched on a little bit earlier, but also what that all means for musical knowledge, skills and understanding. This was a music project. So what does that all mean musically? And what does a shared pedagogy look like that can develop musical knowledge, skill and understanding? In terms of the research, we did think about what, you know, and see lots of effective practices. And it's mentioned before that, you know, you need to remain open to exploring new ways of thinking and doing, that young people were at the centre of these pedagogies. You know, the strategies were always aimed at developing the young people's interests. And music was always relevant, you know, it was relevant to their knowledge and understanding. But one key thing in terms of developing pedagogies is this notion of planning. In schools, it's very typical that teachers will think of the short, medium and long-term plan. For many of the music organisations, this was a very different way of working. Often they might only work with a school on a 6-week project. So short, medium, long-term planning was a kind of huge thing in terms of exchanging notes, and again thinking back to this 4-year longitudinal nature. So collaborative pedagogies is also thinking about a collaborative long-term plan for learning.
Well, I mean, maybe we can kind of draw that out in some examples of what that actually looked like on the ground. I don't know if Helen, you can maybe start us off if you tell us, you know, as a, you know, a teacher very much in the formal sector with a sort of very specific way of working, and how that kind of was brought together with the approach that Drumworks brought to the school, and how did that shared pedagogy emerge?
Sure. Well, we were always teachers who wanted to involve the students and immerse the students in the practice of music making. But sometimes we were finding through the school needing to have a common ground of what a structured lesson, a formal lesson would look like, we were sometimes finding that we were being asked to do things that we didn't really feel fitted with the best development of a musician, less creative, immersive techniques in the lessons. And so by having Drumworks come in and show the process that they were doing with students, whereby it was so student-led, it was collaborative, it was practical at the first and foremost, that enabled us to go back to our school and say, look, this is an outside agency, it works, it's proven it works, this is how we want to be teaching our music lessons as well in the classroom. And that really made us, you know, feel confident in requesting that reversion back to our more practical pedagogy. And I think it also reminded us that we were musicians in the classroom too. And that as a teacher, yes, our responsibility is 101 other things as well as playing the music with the students, but that it was vital that we did play in their ensembles with them. And that wasn't taken away anything from them. It was actually very useful for them to see us playing as musicians alongside them. And that's definitely something that we picked up from Drumworks.
So could you maybe tell us a little bit actually about what a Drumwork session might look like and what that pedagogy actually involves?
Well, I guess it's a combination of different approaches. So at the heart of it would be a responsive outlook. So, and that may be on the micro, on the kind of individual that you'll be noticing the needs of a person, but then it's always balanced in terms of what's happening as a collective as well. So you're kind of focusing in on the small details whilst at the same time working the whole, if you like. So I think there's always this flux between zooming in and zooming out all the time. Practically, our sessions are sometimes we would be teaching something that may have come from another place. So all of our material is made by the young people, but that we might bring some music from another place to a new place and teach that. Or we'll be working creatively, forming something completely new with the group. And also that interplay between those two core practices is really important. Yeah. And the fact that the material is created by other young people, I think also encourages a collaborative philosophy anyway, and a sort of sense of ownership within it. But, like many creative music workshop situations, we are thinking about the use of space, physicality, group circular space, or however you may want to play it. But it's always about responding to the needs in that moment. And then I think in terms, so you're always tailoring the next thing based on what you've noticed the group needs, yeah. If you know what I mean. I think in terms of a longer term sense of planning.
Well, yeah, I guess, as the music leader in the sessions, what did you gain from being in the school for 4 years working with the same groups of young people and working, with Helen as well?
Yeah. I mean, we gained a huge amount, not least the opportunity to think about work beyond playing. So we did a lot of reflective work as well with the young people, and that was something that we would probably not have been able to make space for had it not been for the longevity. Even though that's still something we would obviously encourage, we were able to format that into the work, so that was amazing. And then just thinking about the long-term journey, really. So we tried to be patient, trust music and trust collaborative pedagogy. I mean, when we talk about collaborative pedagogy, that's something that I would think about forming with the young people themselves, a collective pedagogical space where people are learning from each other as well as kind of imposed from the outside. So, I think with us, there was always, and this is to do with also our collaboration with Helen, there's a kind of longer overview where you can think about where someone might be in 2 years' time, but you're also thinking about where they're going to be in 5 minutes. So this kind of back and forth between those two perspectives is kind of at the core of our work and our approach.
Could we maybe talk now a little bit about how that kind of collaborative pedagogy might have evolved in the virtual schools projects with baby people and the way that they approach things?
Yeah, the work inevitably was very one-to-one most of the time in terms of the young people having a music mentor to work with over the course of the programme. And that mentoring relationship, which was around building the trust between those two, the music mentor and the young person, as equal players, equal partners in the work, that then played out into kind of bringing young people together in groups to learn sort of the music skills in terms of developing their own music making, ensemble work, recording, engineering, performing, all of those aspects. So the pedagogy kind of worked around that sort of those skills, those one-to-one and group work skills. But I would say that in what we've actually been really focusing in is on the alongside that, the social emotional development of the young people through the music making, through that sense of the creative process being a process of development for the individual, developing the core of the person and what they're expressing is very deep, and potentially, and it's really maximizing that so that the young people through the work they're producing are expressing themselves, collaborating with other young people. So yes, it's about skills development and moving them on in their music practice, but at the same time, and it's almost hard to separate it out, that actually they are moving on as people. They're getting a sense of being able to regulate their own kind of emotions because of their experience. They're able to kind of communicate effectively. They're finding that motivation. They're feeling a sense of belonging within their environment and who they're with, and sense of pride in what they're achieving. And it's kept, the pedagogy is kind of that twofold thing. It's impossible to separate it out, and I think that's where it's been a very fertile place for Baby People and Derbyshire Virtual School to work on that, because for young people who are really struggling with their education, they're actually struggling with something much more fundamental than that subject learning. But actually through a really tailored and personalised approach to some powerful subject learning, we're seeing all these other shifts, which it's hard to unpick. It's hard to unpick that.
If I'm understanding correctly, that kind of focus on maybe the softer skills alongside the kind of musical progression and the kind of more formal learning process, did that chime with, I guess, the processes that the virtual school were focusing on in terms of sort of personal development plans and all the things that are there to support the young people? Is that something that kind of fit neatly in that approach, or was there any kind of conflict there?
No, I think a lot of people in the creative education sectors would recognise that the place of creative learning and making and doing and learning practically, that's become much more marginalised, and the time available for it. And I think what our project has done and Exchanging Notes has done is it's illustrated the power of that. I don't think it was necessarily something that was there very strongly at the beginning of the project, but because of the being able to track a young person's journey over that four-year period, we've seen that growth, and we've had it reflected back from young people, because as they've matured and developed and become confident in their experience, they're able to express what that experience has offered them and the change it's made for them. And I think we've learnt from that. So it wasn't there to start with because of all sorts of other challenges, system challenges. Yeah. But actually it's there much more now because we've been able to illustrate it very compellingly.
That's such a great outcome. And I'm interested in whether there's been any... whether you've got a view on that, Helen, as well, from the kind of mainstream secondary school, and it feels like there's a lot of talk about how I suppose sort of formal education is maybe very focused on the sort of attainment and the kind of data driven outcomes. I don't know whether there's been any kind of impact on your view of the way that your school is maybe looking at what progress means and what success means, sort of through some of the learning that's come out of working on the Drumworks project.
I think certainly one school, much like every other school, has felt the squeeze in the arts, whereby it's not one of the prime measurements and therefore it can be lost from some curriculums almost entirely. So we felt that squeeze just like anyone else. But this was... we as musicians and music practitioners have always known that it's not just about learning an instrument and learning about musical concepts. It gives the individual person so much more, mental health issues, all those sorts of things that are so important. Confidence, team working, all of those skills that are essential for any job and their future lives. So I think that this was a very tangible way of us showing this, and had it only been a short project, it wouldn't have been anywhere near as clear, the evidence of the changes it made in the students. But certainly over the 4 years, it without sounding overly dramatic, it did change the future paths of some of our students very, very clearly. It kept some in school whereby they would not have necessarily stayed in school. And the way they could speak about their learning was transformed, whereas at first it was, I'm learning to play the drum. And that was the depth of their knowledge and experience about it. They enjoyed it. It was great. You know, they wanted to keep doing it. By the end, speaking in really articulate ways about the process of learning. And if that's not good for a student, then I don't know what is. You know, it's not just about the fact they were engaged in a musical activity. It was so much more to those students than that.
Yeah. No, well, no, I mean, I absolutely, both Kim and Helen have framed it perfectly, but I couldn't agree more. You can't divide the music making and the social development. They're one thing and they feed each other. And I feel that... I mean, I really feel that music is a vehicle, is a perfect vehicle for that, because it requires you to face different areas of development, whether that's just learning to coexist or to how to work with people that you may otherwise be disconnected from. I mean, it kind of encourages all these things naturally. And as has been said, that the longevity of the process has enabled us to offer opportunities for the young people to vocalize that themselves, so to process that. So they're not only feeling it intuitively through the sessions and through the work and through the exploration, and they're feeling it practically through that too. They're also have had an opportunity to reflect on it as well and vocalize it to each other. And I think that's been a really empowering process. You know, they've had to face some of their most fundamental insecurities. They've had to face them collectively through collaborative or creative process. And also move forward from them collectively. So that, even in as one small example of growth, has been huge for them.
Well, there's something there about resilience, maybe.
A huge amount of resilience. But also, yeah, just all of those things, resilience, communication, honesty, trust, allowing yourself to be vulnerable, you know, powerful tools.
Absolutely. And tools that, you know, we all need to be equipped with, don't we?
I think what's interesting is that you've all touched on something quite fundamental in terms of data, in terms of school data can often just capture certain perspectives of progression. And actually what was shown in exchanging notes is that thinking beyond some of those school measures, you know, and exploring some of these social, cultural aspects of what the young people were learning was extremely important to give a more rounded overview of the narrative of the development of these young musicians. So I think that that's extremely important for the kind of future of education as a whole. You know, what does the data tell us? And actually, what more do we need to know about what success for these young people looks like?
Right. Well, I mean, talking about data and measures of success, that was something that you and the team at BCU were looking at. So could you tell us a bit, Victoria, about you know, what the findings of that research were in terms of the impact of exchanging notes on the young people?
Yeah, so part of our research process was to collect a range of different data sources from the project. Part of that was collecting the attendance data of the young people and their attainment data. In terms of attainment, though, we asked schools to provide us information on the young people's English and numeracy attainment, because that was quite consistent across all the projects. tracks. You know, that's something that schools definitely collect. From Key Stage 3, it goes through with them until Key Stage 3 and Key Stage 4. We also asked music leaders and teachers to give us their perceptions of the young people's measures of engagement. The young people also provided us with their perceptions of the project as well, alongside interviews, observations. So there's a whole host of data that we collected. In terms of the school data, however, towards the end of the project and the findings that we found is that 95% of the young people were consistently higher in terms of their level of attendance over the project. So in terms of these young people were considered at risk, that's kind of hugely positive outcome, because many of these young people, for a variety of different reasons, we had lots of different projects as part of exchanging notes. Some schools, some young people had profound multiple learning difficulties, but 95% is a huge average for young people, you know, attending school. 2/3 of the young musicians maintained or improved their attendance in their attainment in English, and 3/4 of the young musicians maintained or improved their attainment in maths across the 4 years. And there has been other studies before that's kind of made the link between maths and music making. But in terms of these young people, they are kind of hugely positive impacts for the project in terms of, you know, educational outcomes. But what I do want to kind of say is that we're not going to claim any kind of necessary link that, you know, it was exchanging notes that caused that. There was a causal link, but that, you know, exchanging notes did have a huge impact on these young people's lives. And kind of thinking back to this notion of data, this was a 4-year project, and actually during the course of the 4 years, the attainment data wasn't necessarily always positive. And so it took the 4 years for those positive outcomes to become observed. And so that's why it's important that when we're thinking about data, we need to extend it beyond necessarily that which is collected by schools, traditionally maths, English. You know, if we're thinking about a young musician, it needs to extend beyond that.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that's best exemplified by some sort of real examples of what that actually looked like. So Kim, if we can start with you, like what were some of the outcomes that you saw in sort of real time and in the young people who were involved in your Exchanging Notes project?
Yeah, I mean, some really, really positive stories. For example, one young person who at the start of the project was attending a special school in Derbyshire. And the, you know, realistically, the prospect of him moving to mainstream wasn't even mooted at the beginning of the project. But through his participation, and actually particularly the confidence building with his mentor and actually the group work during the holidays, it meant he was actually mixing with young people outside of his normal school group, and he was having great fun and really starting to kind of rise to, you know, overcome some of his, you know, anticipation worries and actually achieving like really well within those sessions. And we found that by and actually his foster carer actually did a presentation at the National Association of Foster Carers about the her experience of him growing through his music participation, and it just slowly it built, and then he made the move to mainstream school where he's done really, really well and taken his GCSEs, which was certainly nothing that was on the cards at the beginning of the project. And I think, you know, most people do attribute that a lot down to his experience of exchanging notes. Other young people have found the confidence to, one young person has trained with the University of the First Age as a peer tutor, and now she's a super lead peer tutor. Wow. Working with the national team. And really, she attributes that herself to the confidence of working with her music mentor and her performance confidence. And actually that was really, she said that was really critical for her, that she could do anything after standing up on a stage performing. She knew she could achieve anything. So she's gone on and achieved, and she won the Derbyshire Education Achievement Award overall last year for all our children in care get awards, and she was the overall winner for the Education Achievement Award.
Oh, that's amazing.
So we've got really sort of powerful stories, and we've had emails from young people reflecting on the journey they were on and saying how it keeps coming back to the confidence, you know, sense of being respected. I now believe in myself type of story. We have a young man who has complex learning difficulties, who is now performing in a youth theatre and actually is going to be performing in as part of Edinburgh Festival.
Oh, wow.
So these are things we could never have anticipated, but it's all down to confidence. And I would also say the connectivity of baby people with other agencies, theatres, dance companies. So it's something around the cultural sector convening around this work and this learning. Lots of really interesting progression.
And back to that multi-agency partnership working again. And I also, I guess, you know, I suppose with all young people, with all people, that consistency is so important. But I'd imagine that with, you know, children who are kind of looked after, that sense of consistency over 4 years must have been really key in, I guess, building those bonds and enabling the platforms for success as well.
Yeah, it takes, this kind of work takes time and lots of deep thinking about the work. And I think, if only we could capture all the depth of the philosophical and professional deliberations that have gone into all of this work. It's amazing. And I think to see the success stories attributed to it, it's like, what are we going to do with all those, you know, those great stories, because they're really inspiring.
In the project at the Warren, could you tell us a bit about, you know, the impact that you've seen on the young people that have been involved in the project? You know, was it what you were expecting when you started at the outset of the 4 years?
What I was hoping for and so much more as well, I would say, probably. What I was hoping for was increased engagement in certainly my subject of music, and that happened because when we looked at the GCSE group that were near the end of the project, two-thirds of them were drumwork students, and that was clearly a strong link there, so impact was made. But more anecdotally and more the personal stories, I would say, mean almost more, I think, now, and weren't anticipated in the start, certainly. Students who were kept in school who may not otherwise have made it through to year 11. One particular student had real issues controlling his frustrations about learning and about social situations he would struggle to cope with emotionally, and partly because he couldn't articulate those feelings and get through in any other way, and would sometimes do the wrong thing, and then consequences would follow, and then he was disengaged again. And the process of being in drumworks, it took him on a journey where he learned how to articulate his feelings. He learned how to control those. He took GCSE music. He completed the course. He stayed through the 5 years at school, whereas many staff would not have predicted that. And he's now in an apprenticeship. And his mum happily attributes that pretty fundamentally at the door of drumworks and in changing his life, in setting him on a far better, more prosperous path than she would have felt at the start of the project that he was going to be going down. And I think an important point of it was giving self-belief and self-worth to these students. They're living in Barking and Dagenham, an area which has its own issues and its challenges. They're on the cusp of London, yet never go into London because it's not what they would generally do necessarily, and drumworks took them to those places, opened up those horizons. I think also to us as a school, it was very much we might have felt that we didn't deserve this all the time. We weren't good enough to be involved in these kind of projects. And so it raised our self-esteem as well. And all of the students felt good for having a project like Drumworks in their school. So it really transformed the self-belief of the students directly involved, and I would say the school community as well. And then some of our students becoming members of the separate band who travel into London on a regular basis to rehearse with Drumheads, and were on the panel as well for leading the program and the change. These were students, some of which we would have never hoped would take up those kind of opportunities, would have been very introverted, not confident enough, not believing in themselves enough. So definitely, as outside of a musical sense of achievement, all those other aspects that they developed in were so much more rewarding, frankly, by the end of it, yeah, than what we could have hoped to have achieved.
And some of the young people actually were advocating quite strongly towards the end of the 4 years for it to continue, weren't they?
They were. There were many impassioned letters, very articulate letters, multicoloured letters, sent to the head teacher, reinforcing the need for projects like this in their school and other schools, how they didn't want to lose it. They appreciated it cost a lot of money, but it was important to them. It wasn't just time out of a lesson. It was giving them so much more than they could have ever dreamt of getting. And it was an important part of their lives that they had. Sam and Hill had been in their lives for 4 years running Drumworks with them. That was the most consistent staffing, and possibly for a few of them, the most consistent adults in their lives. And that's priceless for these students. And they needed to be heard, and as it would have been in the entire process. They had the courage to write those letters, whereas at the start of the project, they may not have had the courage to write a letter directly to their head teacher, arguing, very well arguing, their view and their point.
Maybe kind of helping to create a next generation of social activists.
Absolutely, maybe.
What's important about that, though, is that actually some of them were at their end of their journey at the Warren. And what they were recognising was the importance of a project like this for others. You know, in Drumworks, you worked kind of vertically. You know, a lot of the older young musicians worked with some of the younger groups within the project. And that kind of vertical nature of the project, you know, peer learning from one another was important in what you were doing. But the fact that they wrote to the head teacher and saw that value, it wasn't a case of we've had this great experience, thank you very much. It was, this is important for younger people, you know, following us through.
I think that sense of taking responsibility for, you know, being an active voice was definitely something that grew throughout everyone. And that manifested itself when they ran workshops for younger primary school kids. I think a lot of the people that were then doing that at that point, when we first met them, they were anti-education. They were anti that sort of social responsibility, and that was changed across the board. And I think we can name quite a few sort of success stories, if you like, about, and be specific, people going off to want to be architects or whatever it might be. But I think actually it was the way, for me anyway, I think the way that they were able to talk about their own development and about development, the way they were able to talk about communicating, the way they were able to talk about and acknowledge their own journeys was as powerful as anything else.
And
as Helen says, for a lot of them, just staying in education was a huge achievement. But for me, the emotional journey was huge. And I also think we need to remember that they became very good drummers as well.
The
level of the music that they make is also worth recognising. Mm. So I tend to focus more on the social stuff, but actually it's worth acknowledging that musically
they became young musicians.
They move forward. a long way.
So. And the, I mean, the two aren't, they're not divorced, are they? They're not at all. Being able to communicate is an essential component of being a musician.
Exactly. And for them, a lot of them, you know, their recognition that, I mean, in terms of the study and in terms of how we can, you know, acknowledge growth and change, for them, they were vocalizing the fact that they found it easier to concentrate in lessons. Mm. They were able to hold form and kind of cognitive processes in their brains in an easier way for them. They were able to communicate better. So there was, I think it's for another study probably, but the cognitive development that has gone through this way of working is, as people call it, transferable skills, you know.
I'm really interested, you know, it's not strictly about the impact on the young people, but just as the music leader who's been running this for 4 years and working with, the same group of young people over 4 years, kind of what impact it's had on you personally as well, and, yeah, what you've seen in yourself.
Well,
putting you on the spot here a bit.
No, that's fine. I mean, I feel lucky in a way, actually, to have been able to form these close relationships with these young people because, I think it's a kind of privilege in a way to be part of helping someone open in that way. They were very closed. There was a lot of aggression. There was a lot of distrust, you know. So I feel lucky to have been able to be part of helping have a different approach to the world, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, as a practitioner, I work in a lot of different contexts, so it was really good for me in my work to have this longevity. Also, actually, the dialogue with Victoria and with Martin has proved really interesting for me as well, being able to align some of the ways I work with ideas around social pedagogy. And that's caused me to reflect further into the kind of roots and academic theory that sit behind or underpin what we do. So that's been really useful.
That's brilliant. And in terms of, I guess, life at the Warren School now that exchanging notes has ended, like what, and maybe we're kind of drawing on some of the stuff we talked about earlier, but what are some of the longer lasting changes, or are there longer lasting changes that are kind of existing on in the school?
I think the impact of it will always be there. Certainly whilst the staffing stays the same, we will always remember the journey that we've come on with Drumworks. We are fortunate that we're still working with Drumworks, and we've secured some vital funding to be able to continue providing this programme for students under slightly different circumstances. We're now exploring other routes and how this project can support other students with various different needs. And we've gone through an extremely long audition process, and nigh on every single student wanted to be involved because they've heard about it, they've seen it. So I think the impact in that way has been enormous. And just the self-esteem as well of the school, that we were at the start of the project not deemed to be a very successful school on a number of different scores, yet we were invited and included in this project, and exchanging notes stuck with it, and Drumworks stuck with us through this journey, which has had a significant number of ups and downs, and that we were valued in that, and our students were valued, and that certainly for us was a big change for us, and meant a great deal for us in the future as well.
I think we can talk now about the, I guess, kind of projecting forward, and you know, that kind of brings us quite neatly onto that topic of, I suppose, the learning from exchanging notes, and I guess recommendations to the sector, to the world of education and music education, maybe specifically too. And I know that Victoria, you in the report, you and your colleagues at BC, you made a number of kind of recommendations. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could talk us through maybe some of the key ones that you would like, you know, other bodies to take on from what you've learned from exchanging notes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think Helen, Kim and Sam have kind of very well described a lot of the recommendations that we would say that will come out in the report. But what Exchanging Notes has shown is that joining up practice and working together, music organisations and schools working together, have real kind of beneficial impacts on young people's progression educationally and musically. And it can leave a lasting legacy in a school where it takes place. So it's important, I think, for the future of music education to really consider how that happens. And what's important that we've discussed today is about this notion of a shared dialogue. That's important and that takes time. So if there are partnership kind of projects being developed in the future, then time is a huge aspect that has to be factored in. Alongside that is the financing of a project and what roles and responsibilities are financed within a project like this. We spoke about the notion of an interlocutor, yeah. You know, so I don't think any of those people kind of got paid any more for doing a lot of those extra activities that they were doing, or even if a project even funded for a role like that. And so that's important to think about in terms of future projects. What roles are you funding, and actually how much time are people putting into a project, probably extending beyond their normal working hours? What does that look like? Joint planning as well is something that, you know, we're putting forward as a huge recommendation, you know, bridging formal and non-formal, the coming together of planning mechanisms. And then I suppose the last thing is that we don't just want projects like this to exist within a bubble, within a classroom, within one environment. Actually, partnership extends beyond the classroom. It is about the support from senior leadership teams, recognising the value of music in young people's lives. The wider school community. In Drumworks, for example, you ran CPD sessions for teachers, you know, and teaching assistants and the wider community to come and actually see what you were doing and the impact that it has, your pedagogical approaches. So partnership project is about everybody being on board and seeing the value of music and the value that it can have on young people's lives.
I was just thinking when you were saying that it would be great if interlocutor became a job title.
Do you want one?
I'd love to be an interlocutor. Just baffle people. I think, you know, that idea of, you know, the importance of working in partnership and that taking time. Sam and Helen, what would your advice be to other schools and music or arts organisations more broadly who were looking to set up this kind of project of partnership working?
Just constant and regular dialogue, even, you know, long conversations, deep conversations from time to time, but also those captured conversations in a corridor as you're going from one session to another, or as weeks, every single week we would have a conversation.
We check in often, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, just whether it's logistics or it's something more kind of fundamental to do with an individual's complex background. It could, you know, whatever it might be, whatever the subject matter is, we check in. So that's key. I think, I also think that making sure that you give time to forming honest dialogue, you know, and I think that's the same with whether you talk about the partnerships with other practitioners, you know, like Helen, or whether you're talking about the dialogue with the young people you're working with, you know, it's equally important.
I think we also learnt as well that although we had the support of the leadership of the school, they were happy for us to be there, we could have involved them even more. You know, it was lovely to be trusted with the project and the head trusted that everything was going well and would oversee it, and all of that was great. But had we involved the leadership more, maybe we could have done even more across the whole school. So I would definitely say dialogue between the core people involved, but ensure that others are brought along with those projects and those decisions.
It's a challenge, I think, that you face in any context, isn't it? Because a lot of the work, and this is the challenge probably with the report in some ways, is that it's experiential. You know, you need to you need to be able to feel it and observe it to really be able to fully empathize with what's happening. So I think the more you can draw on those opportunities as well and try and getting people in the room or getting people to feel the stories, I think is really important.
And helpful in achieving that buy-in.
I think a key thing about exchanging notes is that Professor Martin Fortley always talks about this notion of that we were going beyond a victory narrative with exchanging notes. And actually, we were thinking and embedding effective pedagogies. We were being critical. We were challenging what music education can actually look like. And during the 4 years of exchanging notes, policy, music education policy, has gone through so many changes, and the arts in general has suffered quite a lot in terms of its place within schools. And what Exchanging Notes has done in most of the schools that it's worked in is really put music and its value back into the centre of the curriculum. And I think the data and the range of data sources that we kind of collected on this project really helped to shape a whole overview of the impact of exchanging notes. It did represent the challenges as well as the successes. Mm. But this is a very kind of truthful and honest project that has gone beyond a victory narrative.
And just the last thing was, I think we can't undervalue the challenges, you know, even in the workshop, because we need to go through the challenges, you know. And I think sometimes if you're talking about what to think about when you're trying to run these projects, you have to embrace the hard times as well as the good times, because actually these young people that you're working with, the ups and the downs are part of the learning experience, part of the developmental experience.
I think that, that's so important, isn't it? And learning comes from failure. It comes from failing at something and recognizing what went wrong and taking that forward into to your next experience. And I think it's probably important that we acknowledge in this conversation as well that in terms of going beyond the victory narrative, that not every Exchanging Notes project went the distance of the 4 years either. There were some fantastic organizations and schools that where the project didn't, you know, it broke down before the end of the 4 years too. So I think 7 out of 10 made it to the end of the 4 years, and I think that's really important, you know, if we're asking young people to learn from things that didn't go necessarily the way we were expected. It's really important that we acknowledge that you know, as professionals as well.
Absolutely. But again, we keep on saying about this notion of the longitudinal nature of the project, but that was critical. That's what led us to the successes that we now have at the end of the project. The data, the attainment, the attendance data, the qualitative data. If we had stopped at year one or year two, it wouldn't have been as rich as what we have got now at the end of the 4 years. And I think that's just not the impact on the young people, but I think the impact on all of us who are part of this project. As a researcher, I've learned a lot from being a part of Exchanging Notes, and I really value the opportunity that I've had to work with everybody. But I don't think that learning would have happened if we didn't have the 4 years and that funding for 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want us to start wrapping up, but one other thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on as well was maybe thinking about the curriculum and the music curriculum in schools. And I know that Victoria, you had some recommendations or some thoughts in the report about the Key Stage 3 music curriculum that kind of have been borne out through looking at the Exchanging Notes projects. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about that before we finish.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Sam and Kim and Helen have touched on some of these points before, but I think the creative process was really important. And Key Stage 3 is such a critical point in a young person's educational journey. Now, for some of the schools, Key Stage 3 is only 2 years. For some of the schools, it was 3 years. But I think what was important in terms of the partnership in Exchanging Notes was this notion of the creative process. And in music, it was, you know, a whole range of, you know, performing, but it was also composing and developing their own music and time afforded to that. often sometimes we can have what's known as assessment backwash, where the key stage four examination system filters down into key stage three, and that's what's taught at key stage three. But actually what happened in exchanging notes was that the creative process became the core element of what was going on in key stage three. And that was really important, I think, for everybody involved. And also, though, as part of that, it was still working alongside the curriculum in school. It wasn't a case of, you know, a non-formal approach coming into the classroom and doing something completely different. No, it goes back again to that notion of partnership, that it worked with the curriculum, curriculum goals, school outcomes, what they needed, as well as developing, you know, what non-formal music education kind of organisations do very well in terms of developing the creative process.
Wondering as well, Helen, what your views on that, as you know, someone who oversees a key stage three curriculum and obviously teaches it as well. What your thoughts are on the future for key stage three music?
I think it's so important that the time is given to students developing their confidence in performing and composing, and it takes some students an extremely long time to get to the stage whereby they can fulfil their creativity on musical instruments, and on a range of musical instruments as well is so important. And, you know, some schools are lucky whereby they have key stage three lessons in every single, all 3 years prior to GCSE. Other schools, just as you say, Victoria, have 2 years. Others have carousels. So time for these students to work on these skills is fundamental. And you're absolutely right, Victoria. The end goal shouldn't just be about a GCSE in these things. It's the process that students have gone through. None of us came into teaching just to get some students some GCSEs. It's because we wanted to create musicians. We wanted to develop students with those skills. So I think it's very important for us as teachers that when we are creating a curriculum, to ensure that, okay, we are preparing students for the next step, which for some of them will be GCSE, but for an awful lot of them, it won't be. And their outcomes, their learning, are just important and should be just as important to us, that their development, even up to the end of key stage three and then they stop, is fundamental and an important part of the process, and that time needs to be given on the curriculum for that aspect, as well as preparing musicians for future qualifications and courses.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of the curriculum, but I do think that there are, from our perspective, I think there are two things from a Drumworks perspective, which I think is worth recognising, or we would say we feel would be important. Of course, the creative process, but I also think that the creative process is a fantastic vehicle for actually learning practical musical information at the same time. We can make, at the same time as learning more about the building blocks that do that making. So that can be a kind of holistic approach to information learning at the same time as all the other benefits of creative education, which perhaps are not only practical but also emotional and social. And then I would also just want to add in the importance of physical learning, which I think is illustrated in Drumworks, tactile learning, learning with the body, feeling it. And I think that's really relevant to music education, but potentially, arguably, is also another one of those transferable things that could perhaps play a larger role in the wider educational context.
Yeah, I guess we're back again to kind of measures of success and also, I suppose, to the importance of young people being at the heart of everything that everybody is doing in education. And if, you know, looking at curriculums, you know, how do we keep kind of youth voice at the heart of everything that happens going forward? And how is, you know, the education that young people receive made relevant to their lives? Thank you so much, everybody. It's been such a fantastic opportunity to talk to all of you about your exchanging notes work and project. So thank you for coming in and taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks for bringing us together to talk about it. It's been great.
That's great. Thank you.
If you like what what you've heard today, then please do rate us and subscribe on your podcast app. And check out the Youth Music Network, which is an online community where you can find out more about Youth Music's funding programme and the type of work we're involved with. You can log on at network.youthmusic.org.uk or follow us on Twitter @youthmusicnet.